Shalom, everyone. Wow, what a crowd we got today. It's cool inside. That's praise Yahweh. You may be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. By the way, family violence is the number one police calls right now, too. I don't think that was a complete cause, but it's part of it. It adds to it anyway. Saudi Arabia gives Israel clear skies to attack Iran nuclear sites. Now, what they're doing, they're providing land for them to build their base and set up their missiles and so forth, and they're right next door to Iran. I would say the 12th, now the seminar starts on the 12th, that'd probably be a really great time for the wars to start too, and show the people how bad they need the peaceful solution character education. Now, I've been bringing out some articles on the schools of higher learning. And apparently there's some people out there that are hearing this, and now they're referring to these schools as the schools of higher learning. And they're writing some very bad articles about the chances of them helping you in any way. Here's one of them. Is a college degree still worth it? As U.S. employment patterns evolve, a diploma is no longer a guarantee of a better job and higher pay, as it once was, of course. After spending tens of thousands of dollars on higher education, often taking on huge debts along the way, many face a job market that doesn't seem to need them. Not only is the American economy producing few new jobs of any kind, but the ones that are being added are overwhelmingly on the lower end of the skill and pay scale. In fact, government surveys indicate that the vast majority of job gains this year have gone to workers with only a high school education or less, casting some doubt on one of the nation's most deeply held convictions that a college education is a ticket to the American dream. Well, that's what Nimrod told them. That's it. And now their bubble is bursting. The next decade won't require much more than some on-the-job training. You know, take this burger, put it on that fryer, and it'll go off the other end toasted. That's your job. A little on-the-job training. These include home health care aides, customer service representatives, and food preparers or preppers, and servers. Meanwhile, well-paying white-collar jobs such as computer programming have become vulnerable to outsourcing to foreign countries. People with bachelor's degrees will increasingly get not very highly satisfactory jobs, he says. In that sense, people are getting more schooling than jobs are available. There's that family violence. Family violence is Abilene's number one crime. A lot of this is jealousy, but because it's fornication and adultery, but still the number one cause of divorce is the money. They start fighting on how this little bit of money that we got, how it should be spent. And, of course, it causes a separation and divorce. Charges dismissed against polygamous leader Warren Jeffs. Did y'all hear that? Charges dismissed. Flagstaff, Arizona. A Mohave County judge has dismissed all Arizona charges against polygamous leader They warned Jelps after a prosecutor said continuing with the charges would be impractical. Judge Stephen Kahn granted the prosecutor's motion Wednesday to drop the four charges of being an accomplice to sexual conduct with a minor. The charges stem from two arranged marriages between teenage girls. That is, that's what he was charged with. Whether he did it or not, I don't know. But they're dismissing the charges. They dismissed the charges. Another one now on higher education bubble is about to burst. Washington Examiner, Glenn Reynolds, higher education's bubble is about to burst. The buyers think what they're buying will appreciate in value, making them rich in the future. The product grows more and more elaborate and more expensive, but the expense is offset by cheap credit provided by sellers eager to encourage buyers to buy. Now, this is, of course, the plan that was brought forth, the Nimrod system. This is it. And, of course, these schools were quickly taken over. When the Israelites came out of Egypt, they took everything that there was any money in. They took it over. They formed themselves armies. The Roman army was one of them, but the other armies that ruled the world were of the 12 tribes. Every one of them. Now, history will say, well, perhaps they came down from the mountains, or perhaps they're sea people. Well, perhaps they're not, too, which meaning they don't know. I know because the scripture shows that's them. That's the ones that's doing it. And so I've brought this out to you. But these 12 tribes, they were well educated. And the schools of higher learning, Egypt was full of these schools of higher learning. And they attended those schools. They didn't just go there and learn the scriptures, you know. These people were intelligent people, they were healthy people, and they were being trained to go out and do what the prophecy said they were going to do. Now, from those people, of course, there was millions of those people that spread out, took over the nations, took over the schools, took the people as slaves, rebred them, to where, you know, nobody even knew what they were. They all became crossed with everything. They took the best of the best and took it to Babylon, and then the best of Babylon they took to Rome. And, of course, they spread this profaneness that we see in the schools of higher learning, that the bubble is bursting now. They took this profaneness to all the world, promising you not salvation, but richness, easy life, build an empire. And of course, many of them did. And of course, the kings fought against the kings. The best king won, the strongest king won. And this is how this is the reason, too, that they built this huge army in Rome. And then from Rome, they could send it out to any place they wanted to, take that place captive, take the captives that didn't want to agree. They'd just simply take them to another location, and they'd rule them as prisoners or kill them, whatever they wanted to do. But this is how they wound up ruling the world. Well, after they wound up ruling the world, then they started fighting among themselves because they had nothing to hold them together after that. They were all for the push of controlling the world. They're all looking for a profit in it. But once it was done, once the Roman Empire had control of the world, there was no one else to fight. So they started fighting among each other. And of course, they started enjoying their lust, too, in the spare times. And this is what killed many of them, history says. Their schools of higher learning, the higher education, he says, the buyers see that everyone else is taking on mounds of debt. And so are more comfortable when they do so themselves. Besides, for a generation, the value of what their buying has gone up steadily. What could go wrong? Everything continues smoothly until at some point it doesn't. Yes, this sounds like the housing bubble, but I'm afraid it's also sounding a lot like a still inflating higher education bubble. And despite or because of the fact, that my day job involves higher education, this man is in it that wrote this, he says, I think it's better for us to face up to what's going on before the bubble bursts miserably. Colleges has gotten a lot more expensive. A recent Money magazine report notes, after adjusting the financial aid, the amount families pay for college has skyrocketed 439% since 1982. Normal supply and demand can't begin to explain cost increases of this magnitude. Consumers would balk except for two things. First, as with the housing bubble, cheap and readily available credit has let people borrow to finance education. They're willing to do so because of, one, consumer ignorance as students and often their parents don't fully grasp just how harsh the impact of student loan payments will be after graduation, and a belief that whatever the cost of college education is a necessary ticket to future prosperity. It's always the prosperity here that they're looking for, which was never looked for in Galilee. And Galilee never stayed up with their schools of higher learning. This is the reason they looked down on the Savior and his disciples. They had trades, yes, everyone had trades. They were service to one another. And this is the way it's going to go back to one day soon. Yes, praise Yahweh. But what they're building and what they built was prosperity, and along with it came the pagan holidays that Rome grabbed onto, that is, the 12 tribes grabbed onto. And you see Christmas celebrated, you know, in Jeremiah. He was condemning it and saying, this is a worthless custom. You better not do it. You'll get caught up in this mess. And this, well, of course, Yahweh had to play this thing through to the end. And the time of the Gentiles is now being fulfilled. The time of the unbelievers. That's what a Gentile is. He's an unbeliever. A believer is a person who keeps the law. That's the only difference. And that's a Jew and a Gentile. The world calls it Jew and Gentile. The Jew is supposed to be a believer that keeps the laws. Of course, they've ruined that word too, but it was derogatory anyway, so it makes no difference. Well, the bubbles burst when there are no longer enough excessively optimistic and ignorant. He names it right. The bubbles burst when there is no longer enough excessively optimistic and ignorant folks to fuel them. And there are signs that this is beginning to happen already. Now, this man is involved in the higher education. He is involved not only in teaching, but also in the finances of it. A New York Times profile last week described Courtney Muna, a 26-year-old graduate of New York University with nearly $100,000 in student loans debt, a debt that her degree did not equip her to repay. Well, she got the degree. Hey, buddy, I'm smart. I went through 4 years here. I'm sorry, I can't use you. And no way to pay it. Payments on the debt are about $700 a month, equivalent to a respectable house payment and a major debt on her monthly income Now, this is what she's drawing now, $2,300, earning an hourly wage. After getting this degree now, she's earning an hourly wage. And unlike a bad mortgage on an underwater house, Muna can't simply walk away from her student loans, which cannot be implunged in a bankruptcy. She can't even file bankruptcy. Even if she filed bankruptcy, she'd still have the $100,000 to pay. She's stuck in a financial trap. Do you get that? Now, this is just one of millions that are being stuck with this financial trap. She should have wised up, and others should learn from her mistake. Yes, a bunch of you should learn from this mistake. Instead of learning too late, as she did, I don't want to spend the rest of my life slaving away to pay for an education I got for 4 years and would happily give it back, she said. But she learned too late. She's stuck. It says, first, it may actually make them more economically productive, that is a degree, productive by teaching them skills valued in the workplace, computer programming. Well, we see that's going to other places now because they can get cheap labor on that. So they don't need to pay high prices here. Nursing or engineering, say, a four-year college degree, even if a holder acquires no actual skills, at least indicates some ability to show up on time and perform as instructed. That's about the essence of it. A four-year degree that she would be happy to give back if she could. Okay, now this is what it's leading up to, as the prophets say, and I've got to get back into these prophecies real soon. We may postpone what we're working on now and come back to it at a later date. But Iran to start building new nuclear site for March. Now, the UN has already, you know, sanctioned Iran. The UN, it seems like all the world is against them, but still, they're taunting the whole world here. So I would say by the time that the education, Peaceful Solution Character Education Seminar starts, it's going to be about time for all of this to break down. Israeli officials threatened to kill Turkish prime minister. You heard about the ship that was headed for Gaza, a peace mission taking supplies to the Palestinians. Well, Israel intercepted the ship, killed quite a few of them, took the rest of them captive, and took their boat to their harbor. I don't know how many supports that, but the Turkish government didn't. If the Turkish prime minister, says that not only is he going to put a ship together to take there, he's going to accompany it himself. Now, this is what the Israelis say. If the Turkish prime minister joins such a flotilla, Dayan told Israeli Army Radio, according to the Jerusalem Post, we should make clear before this would be an act of war, and we would not try to take over the ship he was on, but would sink it. Turkey's always been a strong army, and they're very determined, always been very determined in history to fight and to protect themselves. Charges dropped. Saudi Arabia. Well, Saudi Arabia, remember, Saudi Arabia now is giving Israel the land, which is right next to Iran, to go ahead and strike Iran to destroy its missile sites, which Caspar Weinberger showed in his book. If you remember reading that book, I don't know how many read it, but
I brought some of the things out in a prophetic word and on the prophetic word shows, but he shows how all of this, any little thing like this right now, the way the world is tied together in trade wars and economy, that anything like this can start a war that will spread to all nations. People are having blood pressure problems. In the book, your body's many cries for water. Now, we have proved this works because there's several people in the house already that's tried it, and it works. If you will start drinking, let me just read this to you. Your body needs an absolute minimum of 6 to 8 ounce glasses of water a day. Do not drink distilled water. Don't drink distilled water, please. You can kill yourself on distilled water. The best times to drink are 1 glass 30 minutes before taking food. That is like breakfast, dinner, and supper. Now, if you only eat one meal a day like I do, you'll just have to drink it in between. But you can do it. But you still need the same amount of water whether you eat or not, according to this man. And a similar amount of water 2.5 hours after each meal. This is the very minimum amount of water your body needs. For the sake of not shortchanging your body, 2 more glasses of water should be taken around the heaviest meal and before going to bed. They say that after you do this for a while, it doesn't affect you during the night when you drink it before you go to bed. When you first start it, you'll have to get up a few times. Thirst should be satisfied at all times. If you drink 8 to 10 glasses of water a day, you will also need to have at least 1/2 teaspoon of salt throughout the day. I would say much more than that, but at least that much, he says. At least that much, and he does recommend more. Now, this has helped with people that have asthma tremendously, but it brings the blood pressure down to normal in just a few days, according to several people already doing this in the house. Your body's many cries for water if you want to get the book. I didn't write the book. But he gives some very great tests in there, scientific tests and actual tests done with people. Our job is to build teachers of the peaceful solution, character education program. Our example is Yahshua Messiah and the 12 disciples. You can't beat that example. Our foundation is the foundation of the prophets and apostles, with Yahshua, the high priest and king over the house of Yahweh, being the chief cornerstone in these last days. We have a lot to brag about. And that's under the instructions of Yahweh, the Father in heaven, whose appointment we're keeping every Sabbath, bringing joy to one another with our actions and services in the house of Yahweh. Follow instructions. You don't need a 4-year degree to follow instructions. you can get that from the Holy Scriptures. Follow instruction. They say when all else fails, but of course experience is the worst teacher, because you have to suffer the consequences. If you don't, if you will just believe, as the Savior said, believe in the one sent. Believe the Holy Scriptures. You can't go wrong. You know, somebody's putting out some garbage about manuscripts, the Book 2 manuscripts that said, you know, the oldest ones we have is 300 years old. And, of course, they're making out like they're false, but actually they prove themselves true. If you just think about it, brethren, now, you know, the papacy, yes, it did decay, it did deteriorate. But now, the one thing that I've always told you, the reason that the Catholic Church could not have her way and change the scriptures completely to suit herself, and she would have if she could have. But the reason she couldn't was all the amount that Yahweh inspired the apostles and their workers to copy, because there's literally thousands of these copies out there. Now, whether a person would have to be a complete idiot if he couldn't look at history and see that a major event took place between 1 A.D. and the last B.C. date that we have on the calendar. A major event took place that actually changed Israel and changed the world. So we know that something terrific took place, really terrific. And all of Israel knew about this, and of course it quickly spread. Well, the disciples' jobs were to write it down, which they did. Now, I want you to keep this fact in mind and don't get confused on some of this propaganda and stuff that's only put out to deceive. Every manuscript, without doubt, there's some typical errors, typographical errors in printing, reprinting. You know, scribe went to sleep or something like that, but kept writing. Kept writing anyway. But of all these thousands, we have never found one manuscript that didn't agree and the writings was all the same as we hold right here in the book of Yahweh. So that proves it all came from one source. There's your proof right there. Don't forget it. Don't ever let anyone change your mind about that and try to make out like these are fairy tales. The very fact that the Savior and the prophecies that he gave, you know, came true after that event took place. After it took place. And everything that was written there is actual fact. We can prove it by archaeology, prove it by history. Titus, where did he carry the stuff? To Rome. Where did the priests go? They went to Rome. Where did the apostles go when they went to testify to them? They went to Rome. And of course, when they was testifying, they killed them. Well, in Yochanan 5, and this is where we left off last week with verse 40. And Yahshua was telling his apostles here. Now, the manuscripts that was written then, that there was plenty of, and plenty of copies made. In fact, just about everybody was in the business because, you know, they didn't have huge presses like we have now, you know, where we can turn out enough to go to the world. Well, maybe not. Be pushing them a little, I guess. But we can turn out a lot of copies, you know, in our press room. It wasn't like that at that time. So in every village, every town, every city, the major libraries would, or the leaders of that town, the religious leaders, especially in Israel, because the poorest of the people, if you noticed in history, it says they left the poorest of the people. When they took slaves, they always took the best that they could find, and they took them to Babylon first and then to Rome. But the poorest of the people, and what they considered the poorest of the people, were the ones that was uneducated in the schools of higher learning that they also had in Jerusalem at that time, and they were pushing those schools of higher learning. But the poorest of the people, which included Yahshua, Daniel, and many others of the prophets, they would leave in Galilee. And Galilee was a poor farming town, was just living off of the brush and prairie dogs and so forth. So there's no need to bother them. They weren't involved in war of any kind. They wasn't going to cause a revolution. It made no difference to them what king was in Jerusalem. They'd pay their taxes and live peacefully with any king or ever king that they sent them. So they had no reason to bother them. Well, those people now were hard throughout Israel to make copies of the manuscripts. At that time, Book 1, after the apostles and this great event took place that I want to show you what got their attention when it took place. But they started making copies of the apostles' writings after they were killed and probably before they were killed, because they went to putting it out as witness. They eyewitnessed what they saw, so they started putting it out. Then their workers, which included Timothy and Titus and all of these people, their workers, they instituted to make copies of this work. So as a result, we have on hand, even though the latest is 300 years old, we have thousands of copies that agree with this copy in the book of Yahweh right now. They don't get off. So we know, and these people were scattered out, way out, way out. And some of them even in other nations that had been taken captive. But due to the work of the apostles, they got these copies to them of their history. And then, under inspiration, these people started making copies. So there was no way that you could gather up all of this. So the Catholic Church tried. They had book burnings. They had anyone who was caught with these manuscripts would be classified as a witch and burned at the stake or imprisoned or whatever. Their children took away from them by CPS and false charges charged against them. Yes, there's always false charges coming against the workers, those people that took forth this holiness of Yahweh. Well, you could see one central work there too, one central inspiration coming forth, because Satan hated everything Yahweh was doing. So she always inspired the hatred to try to destroy these cities or people who was involved in these copies. But she didn't get it done, brethren. And it's here for us today. And we're not eyewitnesses to the fact that Yeshua was born and that he died on the stake. But we can read about it from the apostles, from thousands of scattered manuscripts, that all the writings are all the same on these books right here, except for a few typographical errors and some deliberate errors that we find in the King James Version. Some others too, because they all followed suit. But here in Yochanan 5 and verse 40, Yeshua himself says, "But you will not come to me that you might have life. Come to him." Well, of course, now in coming to him, you got to remember the last day's work is prophesied that he will tie his donkeys to the branch. That's his last day's work that was prophesied along with the 12 tribes that Yahweh said, "This family is the only ones I'm going to deal with. This family. I'll deal with no others but this family." And that is loud and clear, no misunderstanding, no mistranslation. I'm going to deal with this family. And from them, profaneness is going out to all the world. Profaneness. Through a schools of higher learning whose bubbles are bursting now. Babylon is fallen. You see that? Well, he says, "Search the scriptures in them," verse 39, he says, "Search the scriptures, for in them you think you have eternal life, and these are they that testify of me." The scriptures, that's Yahweh testifying of Yeshua in these scriptures. He also testifies of this last day's work. In fact, that's in Genesis 49. He testifies of this work of Yeshua tying the donkeys that do the work, to the branch from which Yahweh allows his oil to flow to the donkeys, to feed the donkeys.
which takes 24 hours a day. Someone said they only wanted to work from 8 to 5. I said, that came from a school of higher learning. And that's what they promise you, you know, 8 to 5. If you just figure the time, buddy. You know, first off, you have to buy a car to get there. You know, and because you're wanting to live in this home that it sets over here about, you know, 10, 15, 40 miles. So you've got to buy a car to get to this job. They don't pay you while you're driving. This car breaks down. They don't pay you while you're working on it. You have to go get groceries. They don't pay you while you're grocery shopping to get food to eat while you're working for this person for this big sum of money. A school teacher called me last week and said she'd lost her job. Not only had she lost her job, she had lost her house. Her husband lost his job. He lost his house. They had two separate houses. Man, they were rolling. They were on the road making big money. They lost both houses, lost both jobs. They're going to be at the Peaceful Solution Summer Seminar. Maybe they can tell you about the School of Higher Learning when they get here. But this is what it amounts to. In May, this caught my attention, the number. In May, there was 97,777 foreclosures in the United States from the schools of higher learning. This is what the man was talking about. Now, when we looked it up, they gave this on one date, so it was that number. But when we looked it up, it said 94,000. Not much difference, but the last came in a little bit later and had come up to 97,777. And that number caught my eye and I said, what is this? But that was the foreclosures in the United States. Now, if you think about this, it's been going on for about 2 years. Now, they said, at the least, this will go on for at least another year. Maybe a year and a half, they said. So they don't expect this to quit right away. My dad got caught up in this, and of course, this was what Yahweh used. Satan didn't know it, but Yahweh used this to drive my dad and mother from Texas to Oklahoma, where the witness was prophesied to be born. But he had the same thing. He had a government loan. And of course, the government was so anxious to loan money to these people. But they were also so anxious to take their money and once they quit making payments, take it back quickly from them. And that's exactly what they're doing today. It hasn't changed. A man who came here in the 50s, I believe, 70s. No, he came here in the 70s. But he got involved. He was living in New York. He got in, he and his brother, and they had this government loan, and he'll correct me if I'm too, because he's an elder in the house of Yahweh. But he got involved in this government loan. He had a farm in New York, you know, expensive land. His brother did too. Well, the salesman come around and they said, well, you can get this and only pay this much, you know. And man, that's nothing. Oh, yeah, I want that new tractor. Of course I do. When another one comes along and sells him a drill and another one a braking plow and another one a chisel. And before he knew it, he had debts up here and no way to meet them. But it was easy credit, so they borrowed all this money, and then they couldn't make the payments, and that man lost everything he had. His brother lost everything he had. He wound up in Abilene, came to the house of Yahweh. He was hunting a job, came to the house of Yahweh, and actually got involved with building the press room, laying the brick there. So in every ill win, there is some benefit.
And of course, but there's plenty of people that can testify to this school of higher learning and what it's amounting to. And the whole world now is involved, and they're going to see firsthand, you know, what the school of higher learning actually brings. And a lot of people now are on our side, and they're taking this message, and they're calling it, you know, stupidity and ignorance and all the things that I've called it in the past. You know, a person would have to be pretty ignorant, I think, to leave the house of Yahweh and go seek an 8-to-5 job that winds up taking all of his time, all of his money, just to drive back and forth so he can work for that company. And then when he loses his job, let me tell you another benefit. A friend of mine who used to live on 603, he was an insurance salesman. And he bought a place off of me. Bought a house, which he gave up because he got to where he couldn't make payments. Tell you why. He was a successful insurance salesman. And from every sale that he made, the person, when they paid that premium every once a month or annually or twice annually, he got a cut out of it. Well, he had his premiums built up to where he didn't even have to work. He said, I don't even have to work now. I can just sit here and drink beer or whatever. That was his attitude, watch ball games. But he said, I don't even have to work. And I get this big money every month, this check coming in. He showed me the check. I couldn't believe the amount of money he was getting. About 2 months after he told me that, the insurance company filed for bankruptcy. Now, the insurance company changed the name of the insurance company, and they went back, took all the customers, but the people who they were paying the big premiums lost their jobs. And if they wanted to go to work for the new insurance company, they had to start from the bottom. They had no benefits left. But these are some of the little tricks. The man, the school teacher, told me last week, I said, well, what about bankruptcy? They said, that is a laugh. You know, this is a big joke. They, too, hired a lawyer and went to the bankruptcy and the court, and the court said, well, you looking at this right here, you've got to pay this, this, and this. And the man said, it didn't help a bit. He still owed the same debts. But now he had the lawyer to pay and the court cost and all of this. Plus, he had to pay this, this, and this. He didn't benefit anything from the bankruptcy. He said, that's the biggest laugh of all because they put you in debt a little more. Well, that's what the way of the kings of the East or the history of Christianity, that's the way of it. Well, Yahshua says he has a better way. Yahweh says, I have a better way, a better way of peace. You don't ever lose your job in the house of Yahweh. He said, they'll come in and they'll never go out. You'll never have to worry about a job in the kingdom of Yahweh, which is going to start very soon. But this was a prophecy here that he gave us in chapter 5 of Yochanan and verse 40. He says, but you will not come to me that you might have life. Prophecy. Well, it's a prophecy that they would make a choice and they would make the wrong choice here. And then we saw, or Yahshua saw in this, he saw, let's be turning over to Mark. He saw, as I told you last week, ending this work that we did here last week. Turn over to Mark 6. He saw contempt here in these people. And I see it in today's world. I've never in my life did I ever see color in people. I saw friends and I saw enemies, very few enemies. I hardly ever made an enemy that I can remember, but I had a lot of friends. But I could never see color. And of course, in my time period, they had, when they lost control, under Lincoln, they lost control of black slavery. Now, before they lost that control, they could beat people into submission, and they did. It was a horrible thing what went on in the lives of those people. But Yahweh allowed this to take place to show you the cruelty of mankind. That's just part of it. It's always been that way. If you'd read about the Crusades, it wasn't just the blacks and the whites or whatever, but the Crusades, they were equally as cruel as the slavery that and the conditions, living conditions, that people committed suicide to get out of, like they're doing in the army and in the armies of the American soldiers right now. By the way, I think there's 80,000 troops that we have in Afghanistan, 80,000 in Iraq, and they're upping that to 100,000 in each place. Now, if you remember the prophecy and what's going to take place, I keep harping on prophecy. I'll get away from that. anyway, slavery, when they freed the slaves, they didn't actually free anyone. They just put them to where they would start paying taxes because they were losing money on the South, and they wanted to get taxes from the South. And so to get these taxes, they had to so-called free the slaves and put them to work so they would pay taxes. But in this situation, the after they were so-called set free and they were able to start trying to get education, of course, the schools would not accept blacks at that time. Many of them wouldn't. And then finally, under certain leadership, they started accepting certain people into schools. So they got educated and they started educating others. But something I noticed was, and this bothered me, was that they would never come together. They would never pull together in anything. And it wasn't until the days of Martin Luther King that Martin Luther King started organizing these people. And he said, look, we have a voting situation here where we can actually pass laws in our government, but you've got to learn the laws and how to bring this about in democracy. And there was ways of doing it, and the way the Catholic Church used was numbers. And of course, that's what she still uses today. She still has the majority of the vote. So Martin Luther King started organizing these. Before this, I said, back when I was 16 years old, when I first started seeing the cruelty that was going on among my friends, and my friends could not go with me into a restaurant and eat. They would pass food out the back door to them. And I said, this is awful, what I'm seeing. Well, before Martin Luther King, I said to some of the people, I said, you know, as many as they are of you, of the blacks, why don't you put people in business and start taking over this town? They could have done so. There was thousands of people there if they'd have just started trading among themselves. But there was nothing to tie them together, no unity to tie them together, nothing they could pull for. And when a black went into business, no blacks would trade with him. I thought really seems strange, you know. But there was a dividing line among them here. And I believe this came from some sort of teaching of psychology to get this into their minds. Else they would have seen the benefit in organizing and unity and hung together. I see it now sometimes in the house of Yahweh, and it's called jealousy. And of course, the people, instead of being in unity then, they get jealous of someone else and they start pushing against the work of Yahweh instead of bringing it together. And I thought, man, if we could get Martin Luther King, you know, to come in here and teach them unity... Most of you are, I know this, 99 9/10% are. But some aren't. Some still have this psychological hang-up in their mind to where they want to separate and they hate to see the house of Yahweh bring forth the goal that Yahweh has set for us, which is self-preservation, come out of this world, and they hate to see this. And they fight. They actually do things to fight against it. Now, whether they're doing it unconsciously or not, I don't know. But I know that when talking to the blacks way back then, that this was years and years ago, centuries ago, they didn't know why they did. I said, why would you not trade with a black owner of a grocery store? Why wouldn't you rather trade with him? But they didn't know. They just knew that they'd tried this before, and it just didn't work. Well, when Martin Luther King came, it worked. And somehow or another, he started promising them or teaching them that they would be better off to be in unity with one another and start working as a unit instead of person by person. And this way, if a person got arrested, others would come to his aid that had knowledge enough to know that laws were being broken in the United States, laws that was set, you know, thousands of years ago, and he started teaching them their rights. And this is what turned the whole thing around. Well, of course, this is what Yeshua was doing. He was teaching his disciples, you've got to be a unit. You've got to be in unity. And Yahweh's kingdom has got to be in unity. That's the reason he won't accept anyone into his kingdom. Right. Well, you can see what it did to the blacks and how they stayed separated and suffered for years. And you can see now the difference that it's made. Think of this when Yahweh tells you you've got to be in unity with the one sent. Yes, that's the number one. Yes, praise Yahweh. Now, if you're in unity with the one sent, then you know for sure that the one sent by Yahweh is your dependence on life. And that's what Yeshua told them, you won't come to me that you might have life. You won't come to me. You can't go straight to Yeshua right now. You never could go straight to Yahweh at any time. The disciples went to Yeshua when he was their teacher. But when he made high priest over the house of Yahweh, the disciples were the only ones that could go to him as high priest because they were his chosen priest. That never changed, not at all. And from his disciples went forth this great work here that spread out, and they went to bringing people into unity with this work. Well, that's what Yahweh has done in these last days. You know how slowly this tree has grown, brethren? If you could have seen the first crew, I think there was 13 that Yahweh gathered over here in a backyard on a concrete slab. I think there was 13 people at that time. It got up to 37, and over half of them left because they didn't want to wear their tallits and kippahs. Over half. Well, the ones that were in unity with the tallit and the kippah law, they stayed, of course. Praise Yahweh. So we had some pruning done on the tree. And that the fruits that Yahweh cut off of that tree were evil, because they said there wasn't no way they're going to wear a kippah. Some of them said, "I'll wear the tallit, but I'm not going to wear that thing on my head." He said, "I said, but it's you're wearing it for Yeshua himself. Yeshua is your head." I said, "So you're wearing this for him, not yourself." Well, they went to calling it a filthy garment, and they got. Where it's talking about a woman's rags that are filthy, certain rags, they actually got that mixed up with the kippah and the tallit. This is how stupid they were, how ignorant. They came from the school of higher learning, of course. But from what you see here, was actually started back in about 1969 or somewhere along in there, what you see. And that's how long that's grown. If you can imagine a big oak tree starting off at that size, and now how big it is right now and how big it's going to get, because this oak tree is actually going to take over, you know, the kingdom of heaven, the highest thing there is. Now, let me tell you, as Martin Luther King would tell you, you can benefit more by staying in unity than you can by separating yourselves from this tree. You can do as Yahshua, our high priest and king, who is tying you to his branch at this time. And I think I made that knot a little bit stronger today. I hope I did. I'm in hopes you're never going to break your chain that holds you to Yahweh, that makes connection with the branch, that makes connection with the oil that's coming straight from Yahweh. And that's the way Yahweh sells it. Anyway, if you'll stay in unity, and if you'll start pushing, you'll start trying to figure out ways to glorify Yahweh, to bring honor to Yahweh, through his established work, of course, that he has told you. I'm going to establish in these last days, and the prophecy says it's all going to be tied to that branch. Now, I don't care if I'm black and you hate black. That don't make any difference. You know, if you dislike black, that's fine. If you dislike white, that's fine. I don't care if I'm an Okie. That don't make any difference. It did to Yahweh. He wanted me that way. I told someone this week, I remember a house that where we didn't have air conditioning. We didn't have electric lights. And by the way, the people in New York, you know, I found out that these same people, they didn't have it until the 50s. And I said, I think that was when it started coming into Oklahoma. About, you know, it had to be about the early 50s when it started, when electricity started coming into Oklahoma, the outer part. I think the first sign that we saw of electricity was in the grocery stores and, of course, in the movie theaters and in the town of Purcell and Lexington. But before that, now we didn't have any air conditioning, so we went to a cool place, and we all gathered around it, sitting on the porch. The porch was built knee high, and it was made to stand on, but it was also made to sit on. It's just right as a chair. So the family, it was two corners. The house sat here, and then porch come out like this and back here, and people would sit all along here and back here. The whole family would sit on that porch. And that's where we would talk and read the Holy Scriptures, read the King James Version of the Bible. Now, that was my early days of childhood that brought me up to this point here. Now, that was the learning process that I went through. I didn't go to California like my cousins and aunts and uncles and so forth. Almost all of Oklahoma went to California or other places. My family didn't go. They remained in the ignorance that we find right here. And like the disciples, they looked on the disciples, if you remember, and they said, "We know that these are unlearned and ignorant people." And they took note that these people had been with Yahshua, who was also, you know, well that guy was a carpenter. He's a carpenter over there. Why, no, he's not anything. He's just a carpenter. His brothers and sisters are all here with us. They're here. They're Pharisees. That guy's nothing. He probably baptized in that dirty river up there by Sea of Galilee somewhere. And Yahshua says, when they came out, what did you expect to see? They come out and they were surprised. Here's a man that's a unlearned and ignorant man. He's teaching these scriptures like nobody else could. Where did he get all of these teachings? They said. How could he possibly get this? He didn't train somewhere for this. He didn't go to school in Egypt like Moshe did. And you know, they credited Moshe with his education in Egypt. Moshe had to get rid of all of that. Moshe had to totally rid himself of the education in Egypt and start all over again. And when Yahweh got through with him, he was humble like Yahshua himself. Yes. Well, we didn't get to it, but Yahshua came to a point, and everybody in Israel knew that he came to a point where he could actually take over the governments. He came to that point, and he proved that he could, that he could actually take over the governments, but he did not. He said, no, my time is not at hand. And he told his disciples this. He didn't tell the rest of them. They were all looking for him to restore the kingdom to Israel when he came. And they were looking at Yahshua and knowing full well that he had fulfilled these prophecies. This was by the thousands and thousands of people, brethren. That's the reason he could draw such a crowd. 5,000, 7,000 in one place at one time. They flocked to him. He had built up a reputation, that is, Yahweh did, through people who knew the prophecies. And these people told other people. So it spread throughout Israel. So when the time came, and he did a certain thing that I'll tell you about next week, Yahweh willing. May Yahweh bless you, and I'll turn the services back to the next speaker. I love you, brothers and sisters.